Second case today, Morris versus Nuzzo.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Peter King. Along with my brother Kevin King, we represent the estate of Tommy Lynn Morris. And this case presents this court with just an excellent example of when a district court attempts to write its own ticket for jurisdiction. And this court has on many, many occasions counseled and admonished district courts to understand that these are courts of limited jurisdiction. There is a situation in which the statutes require that the federal jurisdiction be strictly construed narrowly, because these are not courts of broad jurisdiction but of limited jurisdiction. And the reason that's so important is because that is the role of this court has a non-delegable duty to ensure that its jurisdictional boundaries are properly policed with meticulous care. And I suggest to the court today that you have such an opportunity to issue a bright line rule to establish and help district courts understand that when you have an in-state diverse defendant under 1441B2, the fraudulent joinder rule does not apply. And it makes good sense, because as we look at the history of the fraudulent joinder rule, it was designed initially, and Justice Roberts, back in the St. Paul indemnity case back in 1938, gave us a great kind of an understanding of how 1441B2, the forum defendant rule, evolved. And essentially, diversity jurisdiction was set up by the Congress in 1789 to essentially protect a defendant from local prejudices and biases. And when you think about its fundamental purpose, and then you begin to think about an in-state diverse defendant, that kind of prejudice is not available. It doesn't philosophically or conceptually apply. And so therefore, when the district court in this case, which quite frankly established, the record establishes in the court's order at 225, when the judge said, our assessment corresponds with the estate, or Morris's, that the claims against Mr. Nuzzo are colorable and potentially successful under Ohio substantive law, citing the Weissman case in Ohio, the court then stops. Jurisdiction is not with the district court. It is a case that must be remanded. And what happens if it doesn't? What happens if that result doesn't occur? Then you have this meandering journey of attempting to somehow find jurisdiction, which is directly contrary to what this court has told us. Scherr tells us this from this court when it says fraudulent joinder must be something that is very difficult to prove. In fact, Scherr talks about it applying to non-diverse in-state defendants. Now remember here, Mr. Nuzzo, clearly, when we look at the civil cover sheet, the Record 18 that was filed by the removing party in this case, Mid-Century, they identify Mr. Nuzzo as a in-state defendant. In other words, Ohio citizen. Never any question about that. So once you have that, then you must apply the forum defendant rule. And that is that additional hurdle to jurisdiction that this court determined was the case in Hurley. It identified and went through the idea of how people get to federal court, but when a plaintiff selects the forum, which again this court has told us on many occasions, the plaintiff is the master of his or her complaint. When the plaintiff selects the forum and selects a diverse in-state defendant, that is a forum defendant, 1441B2 is an absolute subject matter jurisdiction hurdle that cannot be overcome by a removing defendant. And at the end of the day, it's just that simple. This case is just that simple. And why the district court in Indiana took essentially this journey to essentially say, you know, when I look at this complaint against Mr. Nuzzo under Ohio law, it works. But I have to do something else. And that's where, quite frankly, this court must lay down the bright line test and suggest and direct that district courts cannot take that journey. Now, we're not alone in advocating on this point. The Third Circuit in Badoff tells us that we should not, as a matter of a federal judiciary, understanding how important the limitation of our powers are, we should not go into some sort of searching 12b6 analysis when we look at this diverse defendant complaint against that defendant. What we do is we determine, is there some sort of reasonable probability that, in fact, that complaint, as selected and filed by the plaintiff, in this case the estate, does it have a chance of being successful in the forum defendant's state? Now, here, the record is very, very clear that, in fact, yes, it would. Under Weissman, the court's determination in the Southern District of Ohio, but so as to not just say it was a Southern District of Ohio determination that there would be a valid claim, we have Cincinnati Insurance versus Daniels in 1982, where, in fact, there was a bad faith claim filed against Cincinnati Insurance and the adjuster on that case involving a homeowner's claim, and the Court of Appeals in Cincinnati actually affirmed that decision. Now, there is a note that indicates that the issue was not necessarily fleshed out, but again, had there not been such a cause of action, and that went back to 1982, then at that point, we know that there's a valid cause of action. And at that point, the inquiry at the district court level stops, and it is remanded back to the state court. Because if this court allows this kind of journey to continue, then you will have district courts creating, manufacturing, so to speak, or looking for jurisdiction when they shouldn't. There must be a directive from this court that says to the district court, we are an Article III court. Our power is limited. Our power is limited by the Congress and the statutes. You are to narrowly construe these removal petitions. You are to zealously guard our jurisdictional boundaries. Because if that isn't the rule that comes out of this case, then you will have more and more cases coming to you where judges go way beyond what the Constitution and the statutes allow in determining jurisdiction. I believe my time in rebuttal, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
But yes.
All right. Could I do that? Thank
yes.
you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. King, may it please the Court. My name is Siobhan Murphy. I represent Salvatore Nuzzo, who was dismissed from the decision below based on the Court's finding that there is no viable claim against him. That decision was made in the context of removal and in the context of the question of whether the claim against him was fraudulently joined in the case. But I do think it warrants a moment to reflect that what we are here for is to determine whether my client, Mr. Nuzzo, will maintain his position now being dismissed from this case on the merits, or would be brought back into the case. And I think that the court below was entirely correct. And the analysis
on this fraudulent joinder, it's always applied to prevent bias against an out-of-state defendant. And I'm having a hard time trying to see what danger of bias there is here.
Well, Your Honor, let me start out with the sort of history of this case, because I think it explains why Mid-Century, which is a co-defendant, is concerned with regard to the decision to file this claim in Ohio. Mr. Nuzzo is a party to the action as originally pled, but under 28 U.S.C. 1441b2, his interest is only to be considered if he were properly joined. And I think that when you look at the question of properly joined, that is a way for the statute to direct the courts to look at whether you have fraudulent joinder. In this instance, before the Ohio case was ever filed, there was a series of events that led to this litigation. The first thing was the issuance of a policy by Mid-Century to an Indiana insured whose son, an Indiana citizen, was in an accident in Indiana, injuring multiple Indiana residents, resulting in an Indiana lawsuit that was defended in Indiana at the cost of Mid-Century through Indiana counsel chosen by the defendant and handled on the plaintiff end by Indiana counsel who stand before this court today for the plaintiffs. When the excess verdict occurred, that could be one of the two things that could be seen as damages occurring as a result of the allegations that lead us to this court. The other could be the accident and the injuries themselves. All of those occur in Indiana. It is Mid-Century's position and will be Mid-Century's position as this case proceeds that Indiana substantive law makes it very clear that there is no cause of action against it arising out of the decisions that led to that excess verdict. But that's not the issue before this court. The issue before this court is whether Salvatore Nuzzo was fraudulently joined in this case in order to have a jurisdiction other than Indiana. And the first step in looking at how that occurred is to realize that the estate first tried for a California jurisdiction. And when it tried for a California jurisdiction on motion of Mid-Century, the court in California determined that the decision would be governed by Indiana law and that the case properly belonged in Indiana. That decision was not appealed by the estate. And instead, the estate came into an Ohio court and joined Salvatore Nuzzo as a hook to an Ohio jurisdiction. And what I'm saying to you, Your Honor, is that I think that the purpose of a fraudulent joinder analysis is to ask whether the defendant was properly joined, because there are a number of cases which hold that where a defendant has a right of access to the federal courts, the plaintiff's proper joinder of a forum defendant is an appropriate bar, but the plaintiff's improper joinder of a forum defendant is not.
But what's underlying all of that is the danger of bias that exists. And here we have an out-of-state defendant, and I'm trying to focus on that. What's the danger of bias in this case?
Well, with regard to
improper forum, I understand how you track what the litigation is and who it's favorable to be in one forum or not, depending on their interpretation of the law, but I'm trying to get to that.
Well, I don't think that the statute itself uses limiting language that talks about only the concern that the forum defendant would be biased. We have Mid-Century, a non-forum defendant, which has already established as a matter of law, never appealed, that the proper governing law of this case is Indiana and that the proper venue would be Indiana, that is being brought into an Ohio court, which is an improper purpose. And when the district court in Ohio looked at it, the district court had full jurisdiction over the case. And that's another point I think is significant and is a way in which Mr. King takes a detour into an incorrect analysis. Under Caterpillar and under federal law in general, the question of jurisdiction over a diversity case turns on full diversity of the parties, which we have, and an amount at issue exceeding the jurisdictional amount, which we have. That is true even considering Mr. Nuzzo as a joined defendant. So the notion that the bar that is raised by the forum defendant rule would apply as a jurisdictional bar, I think, is clearly incorrect. And I think the Seventh Circuit has previously addressed, in fact, that it's not a bar of jurisdiction, but a question of removability, which is a different issue.
So I take it from your answer, you can't tell me whether there's a danger of state court bias. If there is no danger of state court bias, isn't it better to just let the Ohio state court decide in the first instance whether the plaintiff has a legitimate claim against Nuzzo under its laws, particularly since Nuzzo said in his affidavit that all his insurance adjustment decisions were made in Ohio?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that it would not be better. And I think that's for a number of very good reasons. The first instance is we have rampant forum shopping here. And I don't believe the decisions of this court or of the Supreme Court would endorse forum shopping as a reason to prevent fraudulent or to allow a fraudulent joinder. And I think the court below correctly ruled that there was fraudulent joinder here. The issue presented to the court on a fraudulent joinder analysis is whether there's a potentially viable claim against Mr. Nuzzo. And the court properly looked at what Ohio law is and concluded that Ohio law, like the law of California, like the law of this case never appealed from California, would apply the substantive law of Indiana. And it made that decision with full jurisdiction over a fully diverse case. There is no question that applying the substantive law of Indiana, which I think will be applied regardless of the forum, Salvatore Nuzzo is fraudulently joined in this case. There is no viable, I think, reason for the courts to encourage a fraudulent joinder in any circumstance, whether it's in the circumstance of fraudulently joining a non-diverse party or of fraudulently joining a forum defendant against whom there is no viable claim under the governing law. And that, I think, is the question that the court should ask itself in terms of public policy. If the public policy of the courts is to encourage parties to bring claims that are not well-founded in order to make a forum shopping decision on a second time around trying to avoid the natural forum for this litigation, I think the court takes a step down a very wrong path. I think parties to any litigation have an obligation to bring claims that have a colorable basis. And that includes an acknowledgement that under the law of the state of Ohio, the substantive law of the state of Indiana will govern this case. And that's whether you look at this case as a case that arises under contract or under tort. Arising under contract, all the contract factors favor the state of Indiana. It's an Indiana policy, an Indiana accident, Indiana performance, Indiana damages. If you look at it in terms of tort, any damage that could be alleged clearly arises in Indiana. It's an Indiana accident. It's an Indiana defense. It's an Indiana excess verdict. There simply is no colorable basis to claim that Ohio substantive law should apply to this case. And under Indiana substantive law, there clearly is no claim against Salvatore Nuzzo as a matter of established Seventh Circuit precedent and as a matter of simple justice. He should not be held in this case when he was fraudulently joined in an effort to defeat Mid-Century's right to remove the case. And Mid-Century is a non-forum defendant. And Mid-Century does have legitimate interests in bringing this case to an efficient resolution in front of the Indiana court, which is familiar with the law of Indiana. And that is where this case now sits. So I do think that when we look at it in terms of the global interests of service of justice, to encourage parties to file claims that they know are ungrounded in the governing law for those claims, and to do so in order to forum shop, in order to keep a non-diverse defendant in Ohio, in order to keep a non-Ohio defendant in Ohio, that is an improper purpose, and that the court below correctly found that the fraudulent joinder argument should apply here. If nothing else, I think that's mandated by the words of the statute itself. 28 U.S.C. section 1441b2 speaks explicitly about the parties in interest properly joined and served as defendants. If Salvatore Nuzzo was not properly joined, and the court below correctly held that he was not, then by that statute's own words, his inclusion as a defendant did not defeat removal. And if the court has any further questions, I'll be glad to address them. But otherwise, I will sit down.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. May it please the court.
How did this case start in California?
The case started in California because as a bad faith case, We look at the systemic nature of the claims handling process.
And you filed it.
We did. Now, prior to that...
And then the California court said Indiana law applies?
No. And I think, Judge, there's been some misunderstanding. But if we look at the record, page 119, which is a portion of the transcript, and it says, now, whether that, again, you may, if you want to go back to Indiana, you may not want to use that lawsuit. You may want to go to a different county. I don't express any views on that. What's happened here, there's been an extensive overstatement as to what was before the California court. On a forum non-convenes under California law, which we have cited to this court, choice of law is not the issue. Jurisdiction is not the issue. Venue is not the issue. It's whether or not it's a seriously inconvenient venue. Now, why would we go to California? Because in the California... Why would we go to Ohio? In the California
wait,
case...
I want to get back to California. Okay. Did a Superior Court judge of California say that Indiana law applies?
No. The Superior Court judge, in its ruling, says it's dismissed without prejudice, if you look at the order.
My question is different. I didn't ask what the judge held. I asked if a Superior Court judge said somewhere in the record that the law of Indiana applies.
There is a provision called a pre-termination, which the judge issues, and the judge talks about, at that point, the record 125, saying that there is an Indiana case, a vehicle. Now, that was a case that Mid-Century had filed, a declaratory judgment action in the Brown Circuit Court in Indiana that was twice dismissed by the circuit court judge there, a very thoughtful jurist, a former U.S. attorney, then affirmed that dismissal of the Indiana Court of Appeals, and the Indiana Supreme Court denied transfer. So the vehicle or the case the judge in California was thinking about went away. It was the Mid-Century case filed improperly in Indiana. But Your Honor, I think that the critical point here is when we go to California, we then get all these affidavits. We get an affidavit in the record at 85 and 86. Mr. Nuzzo actually is the one who handled the claim. Mr. Nuzzo, he was the one who handled the claim. You see, we got the facts in California that led us directly to Ohio. And those facts were provided by Mid-Century. And for Mid-Century to stand up here and suggest this...
I don't want the argument. I just want answers to the question.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm trying to give...
Do you believe that Ohio law applies?
Absolutely, because the operative claims handling process occurred in Ohio. And that's what bad faith cases are about. When you go to try them...
And California is a bad faith.
It does, and so does Ohio.
And Indiana?
Indiana does, okay. Yeah. But the point of the matter is, you want to go to the place where the facts take you. And Mid-Century says we are forum shopping when they are the ones who told us that Mr. Nuzzo is the one who handled the claim. All of the work was done in Ohio. The file is in Ohio. The claims file is in Ohio. So it seems best for us to, at that point, to take the case to where the facts, the operative facts, occurred. I mean, in this case, it's not going to be tried about what happened in the Indiana wreck. I mean, it's clear what happened in the Indiana wreck. It's going to be tried about very well. And so once we establish that the California court did not, quote, order or direct it to be filed in Indiana, we go back to the point about the fact that Mr. Nuzzo is no straw man. That's what really the fraudulent joinder rule is about. You find somebody who can defeat jurisdiction. Mr. Nuzzo is a legitimate, viable party under Ohio law that we know had activity and did things, in fact, during the operative times of failing to settle this lawsuit. A $50,000 policy in a death case, and he wanted, after seeking information in terms of a death certificate that showed death at the scene, blunt force trauma, Mr. Nuzzo wants medical records going back 5 years associated with the blunt force trauma. I mean, that's the kind of thing that occurred in this case that leads us to the bad faith. Now, if this court allows, under the guise of forum shopping, and that's the only argument we hear, that judge some sort of policy, public policy, leads us to it's only fair that it be in Indiana, you are going to essentially endorse what I call jurisdictional creep. It's going to continue to creep into the case law, which violates the limited nature the limited nature of federal jurisdiction. And it just goes back to the bedrock principles. As Justice Kennedy told us and cited in the Schur case and the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops, you know, these are not just mere legal niceties. The public policy can argue away because it seems fair. This is exactly what the framers wanted, that bedrock principle of the balance of power, the limitation of federal power, because if this jurisdictional creep continues, there will be the potential abuse of the federal jurisdiction, which violates the purpose and the policy. And for one to suggest that there is federal jurisdiction irrespective of the forum defendant rule completely misreads and misunderstands the whole design of the statute and why that's important. And we would suggest to this court that this is that opportunity where you may properly police with meticulous care, your jurisdictional boundaries. One other thing that's interesting, they continue, Mid-Century continues, and Nuzzo says, well, they shouldn't be able to allege this against Mr. Nuzzo. It's some sort of, we're trying to put things into the complaint. Doe versus, I believe, Sigler Corp, back in 93 in this court, says the plaintiff is the master of the complaint. In the, I believe, the Garbier case involving Daimler Chrysler, Judge Posner says it doesn't matter what happens in terms of the plaintiff's complaint, who they add, who they don't. The issue is, what does their complaint say? And that is the critical importance for this court. If you go beyond that, it allows this creep, this jurisdictional creep, which is dangerous. And that's why I think the Third Circuit has it right. Not only in Able, which is a case that's very similar to this case, it deals with a case filed out in California, goes back to Pennsylvania. The judge does some sort of choice of law, dismisses one of the adjusters, and then a remand comes up, and the Third Circuit says, look, you cannot do a choice of law analysis on a jurisdictional remand issue. And that should be the clear directive from this court, because otherwise, as the appellant practitioner's handbook tells us, there are cases that are in federal court and come to you that have no business being here. And that is just that case. Thank you for listening. And if there are any other questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the